And we're back. We just finished talking about baseball. I don't really think there's more left to say unless you guys have any parting words for the Texas State baseball team.
That should be a good weekend. Make sure you tune in here on KTSW. Again, and we'll keep you updated if there's any changes, you know, if games get rained out or canceled or moved. Keep an eye on Twitter, again, at KTSW Sports. We'll have all the updates on there as well. But if they go to plan, you'll be able to hear them right here.
And like we said, taking on A&M tomorrow, 6 p.m., and then 2 6 p.m. starts Friday, Saturday against Lafayette, Sunday, 1 p.m., and then the following Tuesday in Austin, 6 p.m. I recommend you go out to that game, but again, if not, listen right here on KTSW or listen while you're in the stands. But that brings us to the other bat and ball sport for Texas State, and they did a little bit better than the men did. Jason's pumping his fist. We know it's his favorite team at Texas State, and of course, we're talking about the softball team. Now, you know me, the constant skeptic. This team's offense, they're just not where they were at the beginning of the season. And what's going on with that?
It's consistency, and if you ask Coach Witter, she'd tell you the same thing again. Luckily, we get to talk to her every once in a while on a Wednesday or before games as well, and it is consistency. They've been just, you know, so up and down. And, I mean, they've tried different things again. One thing that always sticks out in my mind, and if this factors in or not, maybe yes, maybe no, Coach Witter, this is always a very patient team. I mean, they walk so much because they take so many pitches and they want to get better looks at pitches, and you know, you work that starter down, and maybe you get to that bullpen where you can get a few more hits off of them there. But even like during this the little, I guess, air quotes here, slump that they've had, Coach Witter had even mentioned to us, maybe they're too patient at the plate now. Maybe they're letting pitches go by that they should be taking swings at. And you know, I don't know if that factors into it at all. But, you know, just kind of an interesting take that's happened over these past couple of weeks for the Cats.
Well, yeah, you can't walk your way to a victory, but to do it in a season just as long as softball, you know, perhaps they are too patient. I know at the beginning of the season, one of the questions I brought up was, hey, who's got the hotter stick? Is it Kelly Baker or is it Ariel Ortiz? Now at this point, you know, I'm just hoping that, you know, one of them just gets this offense generated so that way, you know, the rest can follow suit and, you know, the Texas State Bobcats can pick up to where they were at the beginning of the season as far as offensive numbers were concerned.
You know, I actually am looking at this different than you guys. I don't think it's actually the hitting itself that's the problem. It's leaving runners on base, not being able to bring runners home. Because if you look throughout the weekend, they got 15 hits in the first two games, only brought four home, you know, four runs scored throughout those two games. They left almost as many runners on base as they got hits, and, you know, that's just not the way we saw this offense play at the beginning of the season. But if you look at the third game where the Bobcats came alive and run-ruled the Troy Trojans, they got 10 hits, you know, not too many more than they did in the first two games, but they brought 8 home. I mean, it's just that capitalization, it's that execution and bringing runners home, and the Bobcats, they really struggle with it on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you on that one, Ryan. It would be even if you cut down, let's say they're leaving an average of four runners on base. You know, I don't know what it is. I'm pulling that number out of a hat.
It's a little higher.
Exactly. But let's say you go from leaving four on base to leaving just two on base. That's two more runs that you're putting across there. That's so huge, A, when you've got a pitcher like Randy Rupp on there, when you're really only going to need 2 to 3 runs, maybe, to win a game. Or if you get into that shootout where it gets into the 7, the 8, the 9s, and it's whoever scores 10 runs first is going to win the game, those two runs that you didn't leave on and came across the plate, maybe that's the difference that gets you to end the game at 7 innings instead of having to go into the extras and try to win it there. It doesn't have to disappear. There's always going to be runners left on base, but just one or two more across the plate, I think, does a whole world of good for this team.
Yeah, stranding ducks in the pond, you ask any coach, and they, you know, maybe aside from walking people, leaving runners on base is just, you just snarl and growl. But you brought up Randy Rupp, and by all means, we know what Randy Rupp has done throughout the season, but you have to, moving forward, wonder how much stamina and how much, you know, tread on the tires she's going to have, and how crucial Quincy Charleston and Paige Williams are going to be heading into the season. I know Ryan has a few points about Paige Williams, but that's my biggest concern is, like, can you have, it's almost like just one horse coming out of the woodshed right now for the Texas State softball.
And, you know, you bring up pitching. This year has been way better than years past for the Bobcats. Jason is shaking his head.
Oh, yes.
In agreement. You know, we've been used to last year, Randy Rupp basically did everything. And then 2 years ago, Rainhouse did everything. But this year, they've had a solid three-pitcher rotation. That's definitely a step up, like I said, from a couple years ago. But looking at Paige Williams, she pitched 1 1/3 innings in her start in the second game of the doubleheader against the Troy Trojans. Gave up 3 hits, 3 runs, all of which were earned, and only struck out 1. Can we really trust pitchers other than Randy on this Texas State team?
Yes. I want to talk about Charleston, too. We'll talk about Paige Williams first. I think there's 2 things that factor into what her getting pulled out of that. First, we've seen it once or twice this season when Paige Williams is off and they're able to hit her. She's off, and she's just not able to get outs and can get rocked for 3, 4, 5 runs or whatever it is. And I think that's reason A why you saw Coach Woodard come pull her out. B, Quincy Charleston has been ridiculously good out of the bullpen. What she's been able to do, again, we've seen her start a couple of times here, but again, when she comes in, she's pitching, you know, maybe just that 1 inning at the very end of a Randy Rupp start or 2. Or she's able to come in and pitch the 3, 4, 4 2/3 innings that we need from her if, you know, say a Randy Rupp or a Paige Williams gets rocked a little bit and has to do that as well. Big fan of Quincy Charleston so far this year, because she really is your do-it-all pitcher out of that bullpen.
And, you know, I'm just asking to be a little bit of a devil's advocate. I got to keep you guys honest. I really think we can trust the other pitchers other than Randy Rupp. Now, of course, Randy Rupp, she's a one-of-a-kind pitcher. That's for sure. But the other pitchers, Paige Williams, she just had a bad outing. You know, it happens.
She's had really good outings, too. Saw a perfect game from her earlier this year.
Exactly. And then Quincy Charleston, like you said, she is the third option. But if you look at it now, of course she doesn't have as many innings pitched as the other pitchers. But she leads the team in ERA. And so, yeah, the pitching is definitely a solid all-around staff for Texas State. Now, the Bobcats, they did come alive on Sunday. You know, like we said, the run rule, the 8 runs scored, Texas State, the bats were alive, 10 hits, and they just looked really good. So why have we been seeing the day-to-day inconsistencies? Do you guys think it's more of a mental thing or just like a mechanical, the way they're actually playing the game?
Again, it's so hard to say. Coach Kretschmann, the hitting coach, she's one of, if not the best around, to kind of learn that thing. And I personally think it's more mental than it is mechanical, because, like, it's not like, obviously I can't see hitches in swings and know when somebody's having an off game, but it just seems, you know, like when things are going bad, when Kelly Baker's not getting a hit or Ariel Ortiz is not getting a hit, then the other ladies behind her are just not getting those hits. Or, you know, if it's the mystical, oh, everybody's on base and we can't figure out how to hit the ball, you know, load them up, 1 hit, 2 hit, 3 hit, bases are loaded, and then it just stops right then and there. And to me, like, that's more on the mental side of, okay, Kimberlyn Nivers walking up to the plate and the bases are loaded and there's 1 out and Bobcats are tied 1-1 or something like that. That's mental pressure on her. And again, she has the wherewithal to get the hits. We've seen that do it before, but that's more added pressure on you as opposed to, you know, bases are loaded. We're up by 7 right now. It's not that big a deal if I ground into a double play or if, you know, I strike out here or something like that. So to me, it's mental. I don't think there are a lot of mechanical problems with this team.
Well, they have a demanding schedule. You look at the ladies, like, could y'all honestly go in there on a Saturday early in the morning, play a doubleheader, then turn right back around and play on a Sunday, you know, take a few days off and then play another, you know, 2-game series? Like, these ladies go through a lot, and I would have to agree, as far as your point, Jason, just being a mental thing, because, and they've been on the road a lot. They've gone out to Florida, they've been out to who knows where else as far as the invitationals or tournaments they've competed in, but they've traveled a lot, they play a lot, and I think, you know, it's just, it's very demanding, and you're asking a lot from an athlete, and I think that's, it's just, I guess it's just, you know, stamina, because I wouldn't be able to pinpoint it, like, as you said, Jason, I wouldn't be able to pinpoint what the problem is.
Yeah, I have trouble going to class on Monday after the weekend, so I have no idea how they do it.
Back to your point, Jonathan, if you asked me that 4 years ago, I would have said, yeah, no problem, I can play all those games, but times have changed, and I don't think so anymore. But also, good point, they are on the road, and other than UT Arlington, Texas State is far from the other Sun Belt Conference opponents, and that travel, that wear and tear, it definitely wears you down. But the Bobcats, they're not dominating these quote-unquote inferior opponents, and there's a reason I put that inferior opponents in quotes like they should be. You know, Troy, mid-tier, mid-table Sun Belt Conference team, but the Bobcats, they're near the bottom of the standings. We know the conference season, it's been really rough on them. So are teams like Troy inferior to Texas State?
You know, I think it goes back to the kind of the conversation we had about the baseball team. When this team's hot and on, they are one of the best in the Sun Belt Conference. But when they're not, they're not. It's not quite Jekyll and Hyde with this team. I think it's more so than the baseball team, because the baseball will kind of hover around there. But with softball, like, again, you go Sunday, we're just going to run rule these guys. We don't even feel like playing seven innings, you know, throw eight runs on them. But then the first two games, they're struggling to get runs on there. They're winning, they're losing, you know, these very, very one-run games. You know, I love it when the highs are high. I hate it when the lows are low. But I might trade some of those high highs for just a little bit more, right there in the middle, like, you know, putting up 3, 4, 5 runs or whatever it is. It's just this. It seems to me the swings with this team are much more drastic than say with the baseball team.
Yeah, perhaps we fell victim just to jump into conclusions early on in the season, because early in the season, you know, this team was like, whoa, who is this? Is this the best program we possibly have in Texas State Athletics? And I think, you know, it's hard to label other teams as inferior when you're towards the bottom yourself and the SBC. So I would have to agree with the point as far as Ryan's bringing up that these aren't inferior teams. I think the softball as a whole, the competition has just, you know, is beyond any athletic, you know, capabilities I had. The softball as a whole is just, you know, those girls are vicious, and it's hard to label teams inferior if you're towards the bottom yourself.
So, that's why I brought it up. I have to agree with Jonathan right there. But the Bobcats, you know, their upcoming schedule, if we take a look at that real quick, they go to Baylor on Wednesday, head to South Alabama, who's on a tear right now in the Sun Belt Conference, this weekend. And then they take on Texas A&M the following Wednesday. So they got a pretty tough week, too. Not as bad as the UT-UL Lafayette week that they had not too long ago, but the schedule not doing them any favors, but you need to see, like, they need to pull it around right now.
Yeah, it's going to start with Baylor again. You can catch that on KTSW, assuming it doesn't, you know, get rained out. I really cross my fingers. Myself and Matthew Hamill going to hop in a car, drive on up to Waco, put that game on for you, no doubt about it. I'm really looking forward to the South Alabama as well. Again, they're one of the top teams in the SBC at 14-3 right now. They've got a pitcher named Devin Brown, just a sophomore, like our own Randy Rupp. I was checking the standing, the strikeouts here. The NCAA hasn't updated their website yet, but Devin Brown is one of the few pitchers in the national in the NCAA that can keep pace with Randy Rupp as far as strikeouts go and talents go. I might have to, like, pay somebody's service or jack somebody's cable to watch this game. I want to see Randy Rupp versus Devin Brown. That is the marquee pitching matchup. I don't care what teams are playing. I don't care, Big 12, Pac-12, whatever it is. That is the marquee pitching matchup of this coming up weekend.
Devin Brown, second in the nation, you know, before stats will be updated, in strikeouts. Randy Rupp, as it sits right now, number 5. So, yeah, that'll be fun to watch. Pitchers, duels. That's one of the best parts about baseball, for sure. But I think we're going to wrap it up with softball. Do you guys have any parting thoughts before we move on?
I was just going to say congrats to Coach Woodard on her 900th win of her career. That's impressive.
900 games.
900 games. Yeah. Excuse me. My apologies. But to do anything 900 times, you know.
Yeah, well-deserved as well. And, Jonathan, I mean, you get the W on your 900 game. That's huge. Again, she's really helped build this program from – you know, the inconsistency that was there for a little bit, and you know, not a rotating Dorf coach, but what kind of a one and done, and then now she's been here and just built this program and can get talent like your Randy Rupps, like your Ariel Ortiz that want to come play for Texas State. Future's very bright. I know I say that a lot, but the future, very, very bright.
You can't forget the talent she draws in on the coaching staff either.
There's a, you know, Osman and Kretschmann, former Olympians, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, man.
So that's going to do it for softball. We're going to move to the hardwood. The NBA playoffs, they started this weekend, and in playoff basketball, it's a lot of fun. It was the first weekend of the playoffs, guys. You know, real quick, we'll leave it with a little tease before we hit our break. Was there anything that surprised you guys?
I mean, Cavs-Pistons was a little more interesting than I thought it should have been. Other than that, the Heat looked pretty good, you know, for first round, you know, and against the matchups, they look pretty good as well. But other than that, pretty much everything else kind of went how I expected it to.
First round, I'm not interested at all because the only matchup I was interested in was the Celtics versus the Heat. That's not happening. So, honestly, you're going to have to go with you. Whatever your expectations are going into playoffs, the teams that should beat the teams they are playing, it'll happen. There's not going to be any surprise in the first round.
You know, I was really looking forward to a possible Heat-Celtics matchup as well. You know, I think those are two of the best underrated teams in the Eastern Conference. Don't sleep on Miami. You know, I'm a little biased. That is my favorite team. But don't sleep on Miami this year. And I guess one of the things I was pretty shocked about, Boston, they're just a comeback machine. You know, they played against the Heat in the last game of the regular season. And they were down like 20, you know, with like 6 minutes to go in the third quarter. And I was like, okay, cool. This game's over. The Heat wrapped up the third seed. Now, the Heat did end up getting the third seed, but Boston came back, won by 2 points. They almost did the same against the Hawks. And then, you know, I want to talk about this matchup a little bit after the break. But the Pacers, the 7-seed Pacers beating Toronto at home, that's actually pretty big. And I think that could be the big first round upset so far, or the first round upset in the NBA playoffs. But we're up against our last break. When we come back, we're going to close out talking about the NBA playoffs. A lot of good stuff to talk about there. We'll be back, Bobcat Radio, Monday edition, KTSW 89.9.